Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 108, and that is Pacific Summertime. And today is July 14th. And this was a pretty impressive day, more or less, on stock markets globally. And where the only place you had weakness was on the FTSE 100, where it was down about 0.25%. But that's because the pound has rallied by almost 2 full cents. It's up to 1.33 now. And considering that it was trading in the 120s last week, then we're getting at least a partial unwinding of the short-term oversold condition in here. And not least because I think there's an increasing realization that the UK economy has been unshackled from the overburdening of regulation that it was getting from the UK, from the EU, so that the UK now has the ability to chart its own course. And we're not talking about an emerging market here. We're talking about a highly developed economy with a very able workforce and a very able political class, more than capable of negotiations with the bureaucracy in the EU. So then that sets up the UK to be in a position of rather positive position going forward, and particularly over the medium to longer term. But in the short term, perhaps the biggest news today was that the Bank of England demurred from lowering interest rates, that they do anticipate additional quantitative easing and to begin in August. But that's not nearly as dire a response, or the conclusion is that the Bank of England does not conclude that the UK is in such a dire condition that it needs to ramp up monetary policy right away. But there will be monetary stimulus. And this takes us very much back to the playbook that we had in 2011. What is it that did best following 2011, where we had the Fed ramping up its quantitative easing program? Because the Japanese are going to ramp up theirs, the Eurozone is going to ramp up its quantitative easing program, the UK is going to do the same, the Chinese are already pumping and engaged in both monetary and fiscal stimulus, and then the final ingredient for global monetary and fiscal expansion would be if the US were to do something similar. And considering who we have running for the presidency in November, then the likelihood of some fiscal stimulus next year from the US is, I think, more likely than not, whereas it might be a while before the Fed engages in quantitative easing. But what then, go back to the playbook that we had in 2011, when we had a resumption of the quantitative easing program that had been on hold for a number of months. And isn't that exactly what we've had now? Well, the kinds of instruments that really performed were those that offered the potential for a competitive yield, and the potential for that yield to improve because of dividend increases. So it was those dividend-paying stocks. So then it is the telecoms, the utilities, the dividend aristocrats have taken off like rockets over the last sort of month or so. And they have now developed short-term overbought conditions. So there is the potential that we get a little bit of unwinding of that overbought condition, and perhaps a bit of a handing of the baton to other sectors to drive this breakout forward. But by and large, this is a medium-term bullish phenomenon, where you see that a number of these shares have broken out of medium-term ranges. And that's really quite encouraging. But of course, the other way to play the increasing availability of liquidity would be to go for those types of investments that have got the potential for both currency market appreciation and capital market appreciation. In other words, high growth areas. And you know, it certainly bears marking that among the best performing stock markets in the world this year are either commodity producers, not least Brazil, which in US dollar terms is up 55%. And that's only 28% in local currency terms. Whereas then you look at, for example, Indonesia or Thailand or the Philippines, and they're all up in excess of 15% this year already, and that is in US dollar terms. So that contrasts rather favorably with the S&P, which is up less than 6%, and the majority of Europe, which is down in some cases. For example, Italy is down 20% this year. Well, Europe does have potential for a catch-up play in here. It is coming off a very oversold level. But are we looking at Europe to be the region that outperforms over the next couple of years? That would be a risky conclusion. There are a lot of, known unknowns with regard to Europe. So that would be a rash conclusion. It doesn't mean that the European stock markets can't do well in here. They can bounce from very oversold levels. But on a risk-reward basis, then I think the potential for the high-growth, emerging middle-class countries that benefit from reasonably low energy prices in the high population area of the world, then those are the lower risk ways to play what is the potential for a global phenomenon of liquidity provision. And we are seeing that a number of those ASEAN markets in particular are moving to positions of relative outperformance. And India, while not in ASEAN, it very much falls into that category as well. And not least, when we look at governance all over the world, well, then what we are seeing is that in Asia, particularly Asian democracies, that there is evidence, particularly Indonesia and in India, where we're getting improving governance. And even in the Philippines, what you have now, despite the fact that Duterte is a volatile character, and certainly the way that dissent is being clamped down on is authoritarian in its character. But what we do have is economic policy cohesion from the last administration to the next. So when you start looking at those ASEAN countries, then they are moving to positions of outperformance. And on Wall Street today, the S&P was up about 0.5%, and the Dow was up a bit more than that. And they continue to extend their breakouts. And this is really a textbook breakout. We're getting consecutive days on the upside. It's taken some of the more bearish commentators by surprise that it is being doubted in terms of its ability to be sustained, that and particularly those that have been very bearish are now scrambling. But and generally speaking, what is it that drives a bull market forward? It is, at the upper side of any range, there'll be the people that were shorting at the upper side of the range. They have to cover. So when they cover, that pushes the breakout further. Then people buy the breakout, so that pushes the breakout further. Then there are the people who were thinking about selling, but then they see the higher prices, so they don't bother selling. They decide that, maybe it's breaking out, I'll just hold off a while longer. So that removes supply from the market, and then the price has to rally further to find an offer. And all of these things combined help to drive the market higher. And a short-term overbought condition is beginning to develop, but that's quite normal when you have a major breakout, and it's probably not the best indicator, because a range is an explosion waiting to happen, and the whole point of an explosion is that it takes people by surprise, that it is out of character with the kind of trading that we had been accustomed to within the range, and therefore it looks like an overbought condition on some of those indicators, but they're really only appropriate when a market has already been trending higher for a significant period of time, and that is not the case right now. A clear downward dynamic would be required to check these breakouts. And with this firmer tone on stocks, then the long bond in the US was down 2 full points today. So the potential for at least an unwinding of the short term overbought condition on price, oversold condition on yield, and a reversion back towards the mean looks to be the base case in here at present. And that isn't just the case for treasuries. It's the same with gilts and bunds. So then the bond market and basically the desire for safe havens has come under pressure. That's particularly the case in Japan, where now the yen is down to 105, almost and a half. And the Japanese stock market has also continued to firm in here. I would like to just revisit for one moment because at the beginning of the audio we talked about what are the assets that would do well. It would be either those that have the potential for yield or those that have the potential for capital appreciation. But of course, there are also those that are on low valuations, and Hong Kong, which really has been out in the cold for a fair while now, has. I think it's the 8-share index, has a PE of 7 and yields 4.5, and is a long way from its peak, but does have base formation characteristics, and particularly interesting right now because it is trading right in the region of the moving average, and it hasn't been able to sustain a move above the moving average for well over a year, and potentially even 2 years. I've got the chart right in front of me at present, but then that is also an area where we could see a return to outperformance. Now, with the relative weakness of some of the safe haven assets, gold was down to 1320 in here today, but finished out the day closer to 1334, so only down 8 in the day. Both platinum and palladium were in mildly positive territory, while silver also paired its decline and continues to consolidate here in the region of $20. And yes, precious metals have defensive characteristics, and particularly safe haven characteristics. However, that doesn't negate the fact that with monetary policy, fiscal policy about to be eased, then the value of fiat currency is going to be debauched, and some hedge against that is certainly attractive, and that should help to support gold prices and potentially limit any pullback to just an unwind of the short-term overbought condition. And perhaps more important than that is that gold is still well below its all-time peak, whereas both bonds and equities are close to all-time peaks. So on a relative basis, gold has less to fall and potentially more to rise in a medium-term bullish environment. And the other thing, of course, is that oil prices were a little bit steadier in here today. They were up about 86 cents on Brent crude, but this is far from an upper dynamic, and this continues to look like a more difficult environment for the oil price, particularly as the market has come back into a relative balance. That's what the range tells us. And then we've lost a number of the consistency characteristics in what had been perhaps the most consistent trend in the world from January this year. So we can anticipate a more volatile, a more difficult environment in oil pricing. And really now there is a short-term progression of lower rally highs, and that is very short-term from the peak just a couple of weeks ago, and they would need to be broken to confirm that a low of near-term significance has been found, and we have not seen that just yet. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.